Thunder face up been introduced with Survivor before. Hey?
Yeah.
What do you think?
Well, there was Destiny's Child. I could have played that song.
No.
I'm a survivor.
You are listening to the Drew Marshall Show. Thank you for tuning in. We've got another, I don't know, couple of hours left. Sorry about your luck.
2.5 hours.
Moving on to our next guest, and then afterwards, it's our journey segment. By the way, heads up, someone's going to have to go get them and bring them into the studio. Just thought I'd look around at everyone in the room except me.
And Tucker.
Guy named Gary. Oh, yeah, Tucker's here, too. Tucker's not into today's show, though. Like, he's...
Maybe
somebody drugged
no,
him.
No, I think he's just so comfortable right now.
Is that what it is?
I think so.
Okay. Gary is coming up next. He was born in Durban, South Africa during the height of apartheid. He was born to a prostitute. He was child number 6 of 7 children. Grew up in the red light district. He said, my mom turned into an angry alcohol abuser after my dad was murdered. Wow. Nothing says Jerry Springer like that sentence. This eventually pushed me out into the streets because of the way we began living. The welfare agency tried to take my brother and I away for adoption 2 or 3 times unsuccessfully. We suffered all kinds of abuses in those years, sexual, physical, verbal, emotional. I mean, this guy has got one unbelievable story, so that's coming up next. Right now, it's our HarperCollins Canada Presents. We should have some theme music for that. Just like a quick 4-second little...
Or maybe a song about reading books.
Really? Like Romper Room? The theme for Romper Room?
Maybe like the reading... What was the one that...
Oh, yeah. LeVar Burton.
Yeah, that one.
Yeah. I just sent him an email yesterday.
Oh, did you?
Mm-hmm.
Did he use a special goggles
his goggles to read the email? hold on. Before we read Ken's bio, can we get Ken on the line? Is he actually there now? Hi, Ken. It's Drew. How are you?
Hi, Drew. I'm doing well. How are you?
Oh, well, I've been struggling over your last name the entire stinking show. So can I just give it a go and you tell me how badly I've massacred
go for it?
Shigematsu?
That's right. You're perfect.
No. Really?
Yeah, that was great.
Now we need that music. Yeah. Ken Shigematsu. All right, here's your bio. He's the author of Survival Guide for the Soul, How to Flourish Spiritually in a World That Pressures Us to Achieve. Hey, what keeps us from flourishing in our spiritual lives is a neglect of the inner life of the soul. And more today, this neglect is driven by our ambition to accomplish something big outside ourselves. We live in a society that pressures us to achieve professionally, socially, and through the constant acquisition of material possessions. Drawing on a wide range of sources, including scripture, church history, psychology, and neuroscience, you can't have that in the same book as the church and the scripture, as well as a rich variety of stories from his own life, Ken Shigematsu demonstrates how the gospel redeems our desires and reorders our lives. Ken, what was your driving reason for this book? And the reason I ask is because something about you and what you do strikes me that you might be a little A-type. You might be a little achiever, number 3 on the Enneagram scale. You might be a little annoying when it comes to achieving. Am I wrong?
Yeah, you're right again, Drew, right in the pronunciation. got me in terms of the Enneagram. I'm a 3. I'm an achiever. You know, back when I was in my 20s, I was working in the corporate world in Tokyo, Japan, and I was what they called a 7-11 man. I'm not sure if you're familiar with that phrase.
You worked from 7 to 11?
Yeah, 7
had
to 11.
Had a lot of Slurpees?
Occasional Slurpees, too. There are 7-11 stores in Japan as well. And so life was pretty intense, and I eventually became a pastor here in Vancouver. And I thought life would settle down, but I came to a church that had cycled through 20 ministers in 20 years, had gone from over 1,000 to 100 and something. And so there was a lot of pressure on me to perform even here in the church.
So that's what you've been doing. And now the church is up to what, 7.3 million? I mean, how many people go to this thing now?
We've got a couple thousand. We've got 4 sites. And what I wanted to do in Survival Guide for the Soul was to explore the spiritual practices that can help us pursue a life of achievement and contribution, not out of an anxious need to validate ourselves, but out of a place of inner rest and gratitude that comes from knowing that we're already accepted by the one who matters most, by our Creator.
Can I just admit something that when it comes to those people who do annoying thing. I think I've used that word twice already. Annoying things like get up at 5 in the morning and spend an hour reading the scripture or spend an hour on their knees in prayer or meditating over some candle or something. First of all, I mean it. Those people, I don't like. They annoy me for so many reasons. One, that they're up that early. Two, if you're up that early, that still means the way you're trying not to be an achiever is by getting up early to do something that's not achievement-based. And that's still kind of achievey. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Or do you have... Wait, I don't even know what I mean. Do you know what I mean, Ken?
Yeah, I think that spiritual practices can be seen as another box to check on your to-do list. And so a lot of it depends on our perspective, our approach. It can be the case if we're married that we get together with our spouse or our children to check a box. But the other way to look at it is to simply create space for someone that we deeply love. And if we're hungry to develop our relationship with God, the spiritual practices, as I describe them, are simply doors into God's presence. It's not about getting another thing done, but it's about sitting, enjoying, and savoring a God who loves us. And out of that, we're energized so that we have more to offer the people in our lives and the world.
How have you failed? This is so negative. I can't believe I'm going there. No, this is how I roll. How have you failed at doing the stuff in your own book? If you were to suck at doing what you've written, what part of it would you just totally choke in?
Well, the area where I'm probably most tempted is to break the Sabbath. You know, I think a lot of Christians are acceptably Nine Commandment people versus Ten Commandment people. And so if I've got, say, a big presentation to do on a Tuesday morning, Monday is typically my Sabbath as a pastor, I'm tempted to do the prep then, and you know, just so that I won't look like a total failure on Tuesday. So I'm a failure at Sabbath so that I don't appear in a larger sphere as a failure on Tuesday morning where I have to give a speech somewhere. And so, yeah, that's been a struggle at times.
See, again, Ken, the problem is that, and by the way, this is a great book. The book is called Survival Guide for the Soul, and we're on the line with Ken Shigematsu. He is a best-selling author of God in My Everything. The book, again, Survival Guide for the Soul, How to Flourish Spiritually in a World that Pressures Us to Achieve. The deal is that those achievers out there that really need your book, are they not the last ones to actually pick up that book?
Because they're so busy doing other things?
Yeah, they're so busy reading Bill Maxwell's leadership thing, or I don't know. You know what I mean? Like, they're just so busy doing the making progress that, you know, I think it really takes some kind of a crisis, but something. It's like, for example, your wife saying to you, Ken, dude, you need to rely. You need to. Your tank is running empty. You are a jerk at home. You are giving everything to everyone else, and you're a jerk at home. And that means your tank is empty. You need to figure out a way to get your tank filled up again. Filled up? I don't know who talks like that. But it takes some kind of a you know, cathartic moment for the high achievers to actually reach out for your book. What do you think?
Yeah, I think so. And, you know, if people are out there and they feel like they're defining themselves by what they get done, their accomplishments, and maybe they're sleep deprived and tired, and as you just alluded to, maybe snapping at their wife and kids and feeling generally restless and exhausted, then maybe some of those folks, as was true for me, feel like we need to pursue a different kind of path. And right. For those that feel like, you know, trying to achieve their sense of enoughness through what they get accomplished is ironically not enough, then this may be an alternative life-giving path.
Okay, the thing I really like about this book, because come on, we've all seen the books where people say, hey, you're too busy, you got to slow down and hang out with Jesus more, you know, those kind of books. Mm-hmm. But you've actually looked at this through a variety of angles, not just scripture, church mm-hmm. history, psychology, neuroscience. This seems like a very full-on approach. All angles, you know, you're attacking this from all directions. So let's talk about the neuroscience. Give me some kind of neuroscience tidbit that's going to make me understand where you're coming from.
Yeah, so for example, I talk about the practice of gratitude in the book, just taking 3 or 4 minutes at the end of your day to pray an ancient prayer called the Prayer of Examine, which will invite you to remember one or two things in your day that felt like a gift from God. Now, we tend to replay the things that are negative. You mentioned failure earlier. You're sitting with your supervisor, and she lists 9 things you did well, 1 thing that you're terrible at.
Yeah.
We tend to loop around the criticism. But if we spend even 30 seconds savoring something that felt like a gift, then our brain releases serotonin and dopamine, the feel-good chemical. So our brain chemistry actually begins to change. And if we do this consistently, if we give thanks consistently, setting aside just 3 or 4 minutes a day, then that will change the way we actually experience the world. So, for example, one of my colleagues right now is in the market for an Austin Mini Cooper. And so whenever she's out on the street, all she sees are Austin Mini Coopers. It's not like there are more of them on the street. Mm-hmm. It's just that her mind is primed to notice them. So it seems like there are more. And when we give thanks on a regular basis, again, just taking 3 or 4 minutes a day, it will seem like more good things are coming into our life, even though that may not be the case. When we associate those gifts with God's goodness to us, we have a deeper sense of being loved by God. So it really does change the way we experience life.
This book, again, Survival Guide for the Soul, by Ken Shigematsu, has a foreword by Anne Voskamp, a guest we've had on the show a couple of times.
I like her.
A good Canadian girl,
yeah,
that
good
she
Canadian
is.
Kid.
Part 1 and 2. I just want to read the chapter titles for 2 reasons. 1, there's not a million of them, so that's good. And 2, you've done, I really enjoy the succinct aspect of these chapters. The divided self, the whole self, and spiritual practices. So that's under part 1 of this book, which is really called The 2 Atoms in Every Soul. I want to ask you about that in particular in just a second, Ken. But part 2, the survival habits of the soul. Now here it goes. Listen to this. Chapter 4, meditation. Listening to the music of heaven. That'd be like John Denver music, I think.
Yeah, for sure.
Chapter 5, Sabbath, the rhythm of resistance. Great title. Chapter 6, gratitude, savoring God's gifts. Chapter 7, simple abundance, why less is more. Chapter 8, servanthood, pouring ourselves out for others. Chapter 9, friendship, the art of mutual encouragement. Love it. Chapter 10, vocation, discerning our sacred calling. And chapter 11, redefining greatness. Ken, 2 atoms in every soul. As the Jeffersons used to say, explain that to me, please.
Yeah, I need to give credit here to a rabbi named Joseph Soltovichik. He looked at the book of Genesis, and as he turned to Genesis 1, he noticed that the atom there is called to subdue the earth and fill it. And so this atom is ambitious, wants to get things done. I call the atom featured in Genesis 1 as striving atom. And then in Genesis 2, as we turn the page, there is a different persona coming from Adam. This Adam is called into a garden to humbly serve it. This Adam is lonely until Eve appears. This Adam yearns for a deep connection with God. And I call this Adam soulful Adam. And within each of us is this striving Adam or striving Drew, but there's also a soulful Adam or a soulful Drew. And so in the book, I talk about how we can cultivate both in healthy ways, but because the spotlight in our society is so much on the striving Adam, you know, we're going to probably get a promotion if we are 9 commandment people and break the Sabbath.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Lots of celebration there. I'm putting the emphasis on how we can cultivate a deeper connection with God and with those around us, our own soul, without neglecting striving Adam either. Ambition is a good thing, but it's just a matter of how we're being driven. Is it out of a place of gratitude or out of an anxious need to validate ourselves?
Okay, I don't know how to say this without coming across like some redneck, racist, awkward white guy, but you're Japanese and you mm-hmm. worked for the Sony Corporation in Tokyo. Mm-hmm. And that is, I don't know, that might be the most achievement-oriented culture in the world. What do you think?
It may well be. It probably is. Singapore is pretty achievement-oriented, too, as is
right.
Taiwan, Hong Kong. But, yeah, it's got to be one of the most, if not the most.
Okay. So now, you know, you have this book. Boy, would you love to get your book into your friends' hands that are over in Japan. Some of your friends still work at the Sony Corporation. But if I'm the boss, do I really trust your math in this? Because you're saying if I dial it down, I'm going to ramp it up. In a sense, that's kind of what you're saying. If you dial it down, if you just, you know, light some candles and get all kumbaya, right? I'm talking about the corporate, you know, the corporate dude who's running the show, and he sees one of his, you know, schleps reading your book, and then he goes, whoa, hold on a second. I need more out of you. Don't be dialing things down. I don't trust that math.
Mm-hmm.
How do you get people who don't trust that math to trust that math? I guess they got to actually try it themselves.
Right. That's a really good question, Drew. I'm glad you asked it. Now, if a person is working in a factory, then there's going to be a direct correlation between the hours they put in and the output of widgets. And so if they're working 70, 80, 90 hours, the production is going to keep going up. But if they are working in a company and in a kind of position where their wisdom, judgment, and presence and ability to connect with people matter, then there reaches a point where if they work more hours, they're actually going to be less productive. Their judgment is going to be compromised. They're not going to be as present with their people, their clients, their colleagues. And so they have less to offer the company. And so I write about practices that will connect you to God, to yourself, and to other people in a way that will make you more fruitful.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Again, there's a trust factor, though, right? What do you want over there? He wants to interrupt the interview.
Of course I do. Well, I mean, in many ways, it is biblical. We're supposed to let our fields rest.
Oh, throw that at me.
Well, you got to make room for Jesus. I've read studies about companies going to 40 work weeks, and their production actually went up. Portugal has made possession of any drug in a not for sale kind of, you know, consumption small, and they found that the drug problem has actually dropped. So the problem is the long game. We're not long game people. We're just short sighted people.
Yeah.
And it's a big risk because you don't see the immediate results when you play the long game.
You're a lot wiser than I thought you were.
That's because I'm working again.
I can't help but contrast your book and what we're talking about here with the rest of the world. And I can't, you know, it just seems like such a Western issue. Do you not think this is maybe the giant sin of the West?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, the irony is in other parts of the world, like I was in Tanzania fairly recently, they don't have as much materially, but it's a culture of family and relationship and generosity. And so they're a lot more joyful. In fact, I was talking to someone in Tanzania who works for World Vision there, and her English is perfect. English is one of the major languages there. And I asked her about the suicide rate in Tanzania, and she didn't understand what suicide meant. And I explained that it's when a person takes their life. And she said, why would anyone want to do that?
I'm moving to Tanzania, man.
That there are people in North America, Canada, the United States, that are quite wealthy, certainly by world standards, and yet they're not happy, they're depressed, they're anxious, and so they feel like it would be a relief if they took their own life.
This is a book I don't want to read.
Not enough pictures?
No, stop it. No, because I... What's that say again?
Hopefully that comment was just partly tongue-in-cheek, but there's also an audio version if you want to listen.
Oh, okay.
There you go, Drew. Okay, you're good, Drew. You're good.
If you're not an Audible user on Amazon.
As long as there's a couple of scratch and snip pages, I'm good to go. Because I know there's conviction in it, and oh, man, I'm exhausted from so much conviction lately, but this is the kind of thing that I think, well, I mean, look, I put it into practice a couple of years ago. I spent 3 months in a vow of silence walking the Camino, and you don't come back from something like that and go right back into exactly the same way you did life before. You become painfully aware, or as I've said four times now, annoyingly aware of the need to shut it down, shut up, drop in, as my yoga friends like to say. And, of course, it's so much more than just, okay, take a breath, you know, smell the roses. It's way more than that. There's actually some strategic intentionality behind what you're talking about, and that's why this is good. Ken Shigematsu, Ken Shigematsu, best-selling author of God in My Everything. This book is called Survival Guide for the Soul, How to Flourish Spiritually in a World that Pressures Us to Achieve. Ken, dude, thank you very much. If you ever come out to Toronto, which of course, as every other Canadian knows, is the center of Canada.
And probably the most wound up place.
That's what I'm saying. We are so wound here, man, compared to you Vancouverites. Anyway, you have an open door. Come on in. Drop in on the show on a Saturday. Love to have you, man.
Thanks, Drew. Really great to talk to you. Thanks for having me today.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
The website is survivalguideforthesoul.com. Survivalguideforthesoul.com. Oh, Joe Bonamassa. I got
know,
really
you
excited.
Love this song.
He just released a new album.
We got a cut from that later. Ooh, I said cut. Doesn't sound like I'm...
Like a real radio person?
Yeah.
Nice, Ken. No, Tim. Whatever your name is. I was so focused on his last name.
That's hilarious.